The Springboks were forced to work hard, but in the end completed a fairly straightforward win over England at Twickenham. In this episode, you are going to get a front row seat as I break down exactly how the Springboks went about dismantling the English at their home ground. Now, there was a feeling before the match actually started that this was going to be a forward-dominated match. You look at the two packs, you look at the benches, and you just got the feeling this match was going to be all about the two sets of eight, and we were going to see lots of box kicks, and that suspicion was only further enhanced in the opening minute when we had box kick from both sides. However, it turned out that that was something of a false dawn. England actually looked quite enterprising and went on to score the first try of the match. In the build-up, they actually looked like they wanted to play rugby. They were moving the ball up and down throughout the back line. It was really, really pretty stuff. Marcus Smith, the orchestrator of this, and he was looking like he was up for the game, like all the English did, to be very fair. And it was actually Smith who helped set up the opening try that was scored by Ollie Slightholm. Smith converted that try, and it was 7-0 to the home side. But 7 minutes later, the scores were level. Take a look at this. Grant Williams scoring a try for the ages from a ruck. Williams spots a gap in the way Joost van der Veste isn't used to, and he slaloms his way past four England defenders to go and score. There was a beautiful sidestep in that move too. Marnie Lebok with a conversion to make it 7-7. Now, Smith would slot a 16th minute penalty to put the English back in the lead, but it wasn't long before the South Africans were in front, and it was Peter Steff to toy with the try this time. But just look here at what Eben Etzebeth does in terms of his work rate. I've never seen anything like this in rugby before. England with the ball in the ruck, Jack van Poortvliet going for the box kick, but Etzebeth charging it down. Smith then manages to collect, but his attempted clearance is charged down by Peter Steff, who then sprints into the in-goal area to score. And that made up very nicely for the penalty that he actually conceded that Smith converted to put the English in the lead. But no more. The Springboks in front, 12-10 after Marnie Lebok missed the conversion. We then saw some line-out innovation from South Africa. Did it lead to a try? You bet it did. So this is what happened. Bongi Mbonambi with the throw-in. The second jumper goes up for the catch. However, Bongi doesn't actually throw. Instead, he then pops it to the front of the line-out. A maul is formed. Okay, we didn't score directly from that maul, but a couple of phases later, the try did come. It ended up in the hands of Marnie Lebok, who played a beautiful cross kick to the other side of the field where Cheslin Colby collected, and all he had to do was fend off Freddie Stewart, and he went in for the try. Lebok would convert, and that made it 19-10 to the world champions. But the Poms were back in the game 4 minutes later, thanks to a Sam Underhill try. What led to that was really a particularly strong run by George Martin. He managed to beat the first tackler, and that then gave the English additional meters. That put South Africa's defense under pressure. There were a few picks and goes, and South Africa weren't quite able to organize their defense as well as we would have liked. And it was Underhill who spotted, I suppose you could say something of a weakness in that he was able to target Marnie Lebok as a defender. Now, listen, I've said a lot of things about Marnie on this channel in the past, but in Marnie's defense, when you've got someone like Sam Underhill running at you, you're going to back Underhill to get the upper hand more often than not. Now, there were two Springbok defenders that closed him down, and that obviously helped, but the momentum was already there, and Underhill was able to stretch forward, dot the ball down. I think it was actually on the try line itself, and that brought England back into it with the conversion courtesy of Smith, making it 19-17. That was also the halftime score, but before the break, something of concern took place when Oxenche left the field with an apparent knee injury. Let's hope that it's not too serious. Hopefully we'll find out in the coming days. Now, the second half started off in enterprising fashion as well, with both teams scoring a try. Or did they? Okay, not really. So it was the South Africans who put the ball down in their opposition's in-goal area first. It was Kurtley Arendse who scored for the Springboks, but unfortunately for him, they had to come back because the try was ruled out. It's a shame. It was actually a forward pass on the part of Apelele Fassi, which, if we're very honest, it looked very borderline. But I think, if I'm honest, that it was marginally forward. So I'm going to be saying it was the correct call, even though I don't really like it. But yeah, okay, fine. It was the correct call. It's a shame, but what can you do? Especially given the clean pair of heels that Arendse showed to score that try. But okay, fine. It didn't count. England then scored a try of their own, and that was also ruled out. It was Henry Slade who went over for the English, but they again went back for what was a neck roll by Maro Itoje on Malcolm Marks. Turns out you can't do that. Now, you might not know about the new rules and how it affects the receiver in the air, and let me try and explain a little bit to you. In the past, what would happen is a player on one team would kick an up and under, or a box kick, or a Gary Owen, as they tend to call it in the Northern Hemisphere, and then the defending team would usually have, it's usually a wing or a fullback, who would usually go up for the ball, okay? Obviously, it's always been the rule that you cannot touch the man in the air. That will always be the law in rugby, I believe, and it always has been. But usually what has happened in recent times is there might be one or two players, they call them escorts, and that's not what you're thinking. I know what you might be thinking. These escorts are blockers, essentially, and what they do is they prevent the attacking team from getting their players closer to the man who's going up for the ball in the air. Now, they're not there as a definite deterrent, but they can make it a little bit more difficult for you to get to the player who's receiving the ball. Now, that doesn't mean, as I say, that you can't get past them and challenge the man who's going up for the ball in the air, as long as you are also going up for the ball at the same time. But those blockers are no longer part of the game. Then it's outlawed now by World Rugby. And what we saw happen here was there was an up and under from Marcus Smith, and it was fairly easily taken by Andre Pollard. But let me tell you what happened. Tom Roebuck, who had come onto the field for England as a replacement, he deemed Jesse Creel to be in his way, i.e. a blocker. So what he did was, and I thought that this was very, very clever on the part of Roebuck, he just ever so slightly pushed Creel. It was right in front of the referee. The implication being that the referee obviously can see, because it's happening right in front of him, this man is in my way, I can't get to the jumper. I can't get to the defending player. I can't get to the ball receiver. Creel is in my way. And not like pushing him aggressively, just that sort of light-ish kind of push that implies, hey, I'm trying to get here, but this guy's in the way. And sure enough, England got the penalty. And Smith, of course, converted. He didn't miss a kick all afternoon. And if I'm honest, I thought he was England's best player in this match. And what it did, it put the English in front. They were leading 20-19 at Twickenham. However, 6 minutes later, the South Africans were back in front. This time, it was a 50-meter-plus penalty, courtesy of Andre Pollard, who by now had come onto the field to replace Marnie Lebok. And I think everyone who was watching knew that the Iceman was never going to miss. It didn't matter that it was 50 meters out. Even from a slight angle, not a massive angle, but a little bit of an angle, no problem for Andre Pollard. He puts things like that over the poles for breakfast. However, as I say that, my confidence might be a little bit misplaced. The ball actually hit the crossbar and then went over. It could easily have hit the crossbar and come back the other side. Nevertheless, South Africa back in front, 22-20. By the 63rd minute, the bomb squad, except for Lukanyo Am, were all on the field. And did they make a difference? Well, there was a bit of a spark. Let me show you the footage of what happened. From a ruck, the box moved down the right-hand side, where Damian Dialende received the ball. He was closed down by two defenders, but managed to wrestle his way out of that to break clear before passing to Cheslin Colby, who beat Slightholm to go over and score. Pollard with a conversion to make it 29-20. Brilliant. Now, England may have been aided by a 69th-minute yellow card to Gerard Steenekamp. We're down to 14 men, and immediately they were on the attack. They were almost on our try line. It was almost like the 2019 Rugby World Cup final all over again, but they just couldn't get past that green brick wall, just like Yokohama in 2019. I must be honest, while I was watching it, I thought, oh gosh, they're going to probably score here. It never happened. Our defense was as resolute as ever. And I would say that on the part of the English, I thought that they made a lot of mistakes. There were some areas of decision making where I thought that they got it wrong, especially somebody like Jack Van Poortvliet, without singling people out and to criticize too heavily. But there were many times when I just thought, you know what, pick and go, pick and go. Why not get it out to Marcus Smith? The man had the best test match that I've watched him in. That doesn't mean that it was his best ever test match, because admittedly, I don't watch every England match, but it's the best I've seen Marcus Smith play. He was influencing the game. He really was. He was pulling the strings from the number 10 jersey. Why not give it to him? Let's see if he can make something happen. He had already been doing it in other areas of the match, or in other moments of the match that led to tries for England. Why not try it again? Perhaps another cross kick, perhaps an impressive pass or a creative pass that might be able to make something happen, open up that Springbok defense, create an overlap. There were instances where England did have overlaps and they didn't take advantage of it. Just something interesting. Again, I'm not part of their coaching staff. They might tell you, oh, that's not what we were trying to do. And okay, fine, that's fair enough. But I couldn't help but wonder. And I think that in the end, England were their own worst enemies. I don't think that they did enough or even could have done enough to win the test, if I'm perfectly honest. But I do think that they could have made it a lot closer. And imagine if they did go and score a try, and now suddenly it was a 4-point or a 2-point game going into the last 5 or 6 minutes. All of a sudden, South Africa are under serious pressure. And England might have some momentum, and then who knows what could actually happen. But the world champions know how to deal with things like this, and I won't lie to you. The moment Steenkamp came back onto the field and we were restored to 15 men, I mean, even before that, if I'm perfectly honest with you, even before that, I pretty much knew inside, this one is over. England are not going to beat us. We've got this. We know how to close out matches, whether they're tight or whether they are threatening to become tight. We are just a team that excels at finishing matches. And the All Blacks found that out, as you may remember, in two test matches earlier this year. Both occasions they were leading against us and they couldn't finish the job. Overall, I don't think it was the Springboks' most impressive performance. I'd probably give us a 7 out of 10 if I'm honest. But you know what? It was an impressive victory. We did very, very well. And I'm very proud of the players. And they should be very proud of their own efforts as well. Now, you might ask me for my man of the match. Yeah, okay. You know how I love giving my man of the match to the forwards. And I strongly, strongly considered giving my man of the match to Aregeir Snyman this week. I thought he was brilliant. He was superb in the lineouts. I enjoyed his work in the loose. And I really enjoyed the manner in which he got involved with the back line, being a link between the forwards and the backs, but also his offloads. They were wonderful. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed watching Aregeir Snyman in this match. And as I say, strongly thought about giving him man of the match. Pieter Steyn-Vaart, he's always the man of the match, isn't he? I swear that man has two hearts. But I think on this occasion, I'm going to agree with the commentators. Austin Healey was actually the man who chose the man of the match, and I'm going to agree with the former England and British and Irish Lion player. Cheslin Kolbe is the man of the match. He was just dazzling this week.